John Updike remains one of the most admired and prolific voices in American literature. Over five decades, he produced novels, short stories, poems, criticism, and essays that examine faith and art, desire, and the American experience in all its complexity. His work, most famously the Rabbit novels, earned him two Pulitzer Prizes and a place in the canon of 20th century fiction. But beyond his published pages, Updike was also a dedicated correspondent. He wrote thousands of letters to family, friends, editors, and fellow writers, an ongoing, intimate conversation that reveals the man behind the meticulous prose. Now in the new book, The Selected Letters of John Updike, editor James Schiff offers readers a window into that private world, drawing from decades of correspondence. Schiff presents a portrait of Updike as both craftsman and confidant, generous, witty, and endlessly reflective about writing and life. Again, the name of the new book is Selected Letters of John Updike. It's a great pleasure to welcome James Schiff to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. It's a delight to have you here.
Thanks, Joe. No, it's a delight to be here.
You have published several books on American fiction. You have written about John Updike before. What was it like to go step into this realm of looking at his correspondence?
Well, you know, actually, it was delightful. Although initially when Martha Updike, John's widow and second wife, approached me in 2015 to take on the project, I was flattered, but I was a little overwhelmed by the project because Updike, as you know, was a mass producer. Not only did he write 65 books, but he wrote thousands and thousands of letters, notes, postcards, and he also didn't save copies of his letters. So I would have to go out and find them all. But I think for me, what was so important and why I took the project on, and really why I have worked on Updike now for almost 40 years, though I have written books on other writers, is probably two reasons. Just, you know, he wrote amazing sentences. I mean, you know, I don't think anybody writes better sentences than he did. You know, so elegant and intelligent, always observant, verbally alert, always, you know, funny and witty as well. And then I think he also has this wonderful way of making the quotidian meaningful and beautiful and even mysterious. And, you know, I grew up in middle America, so I always thought I had to go elsewhere to find, you know, writers who would I don't know. When I was in my 20s, I kind of thought, I wanted to be in Hemingway's Paris or Tolstoy's Russia. Mm. And I think Updike was a writer who made me see that the quotidian, the world from which I came, was just as interesting and as I said, beautiful.
You brought up something interesting in the beginning of your answer to that, which was, we think of there being an archive, but these letters were out in the world. So how did you find them and know that they existed to any given individual?
Sure. No, that's a good question. And fortunately, a lot of people saved their Updike letters. Beginning with John's mother, who was a struggling writer. In fact, John, during his childhood, was reading her manuscripts when he was young as 8 years old. And so I think she always saw John as, if she wasn't going to succeed as a writer, she was going to encourage him and as much as she could. So she kept really what was about 2,000 letters and postcards that he sent to her, and even had those some of those letters bound. So that was kind of my start. And those are wonderful letters. And also both of his wives, Mary and Martha, kept their letters. And, you know, those are among the finest letters. But you have writers like Ian McEwan and Philip Roth and Muriel Spark and Joyce Carol Oates all have their letters archived at different institutional libraries. And then you have literally thousands of other people who have Updike letters, and many of those are in libraries, but many of those are also in people's attics and drawers and closets. And so I made a number of trips to people's homes, particularly apartments in New York City, and met with those who had Updike letters, particularly from The New Yorker and elsewhere, and photographed those letters and made them part of the collection.
The book is chronological, and is that the easiest way? Not to say that you were looking for the easiest way, but is that the easiest way to do it?
It's a traditional way to do it, and I think it actually makes the best sense. And I think probably the only thing that's different with Updike's collection of letters versus those of other writers is that he left such a long paper trail behind him and wrote so many letters with so much information that the letters actually connect and probably form a kind of autobiography more than almost any letters volume that I've read. But in answer to your question, your chronology seems to be the way to go with these kind of projects.
When you look at it in through that lens and that way, I mean, one of the things that was astonishing to me in reading the collection is just even in the beginning of the book, very much to the end, of how intimate the letters are, how clear they are, but also how beautifully written they are.
Exactly. And that's why I took on the project. I mean, it took me 8 years to do this. It was the most pleasurable experience I've ever had as a researcher, as a writer. And, you know, I actually, the first few years, I had a graduate student who I would work with. And we would, at times, we would read, say, 20 letters aloud in my office. And then, we would say, let's pick the two best. And we would have to kind of, do pros and cons. But I think what we found was that, and my graduate students said this as well, that they loved reading these letters. And I think there was something for Updike that he wanted to give pleasure when writing and when writing letters as well. And that was not only pleasure to himself, but even to the recipient. And at times he was annoyed by the recipient, or he was, they were just, they were pestering him, but he still, he could still be funny and witty. And as I said, made it a pleasurable activity.
They also just seem to be the book is a bit of a page turner. It's hard to stop at any given point.
Well, that's great to hear, and I mean that's what I was hoping. Though, I did an awful lot of work to put together what I thought were the best letters, and really, what I should say too is that this was only about 4% of the letters that I read. And it's a large volume. It's 700 letters, about 850 pages. But, this is 4% of the letters. I mean, an analogy would be it's probably as hard getting your Updike letter into this volume as it is getting your kid into an Ivy League school. I mean, it's very, there were a lot of great letters that I read that, just didn't make the cut. But in answer to your question about it being a page turner, I think, John was never one to keep journals or a diary of any sort, but his letters often serve that function, and particularly the letters to his parents back in Plowville, Pennsylvania, which would often chronicle what was going on with his family, with his children, with his writing, with his travels. And so they actually do, in a way, tell his life story probably more fully and in a more detailed way than most collections of letters do. And because he wrote such good sentences and was such a shrewd observer of the world, I think they do become quite compelling. So, no, I'm delighted to hear that.
One of the other things that struck me is that he's obviously very candid. He's also, he can be self-critical, can he?
Yes, he was. And sometimes, the self-effacing nature of Updike almost feels to be a guise, or at times you wonder, how is this disingenuous? And I think it was also a way of kind of protecting himself You know, he did wear a number of guises, you could say, as I think any famous person needs to do at times. But there was not the arrogance, and in fact, I think I even talk about that in the introduction, because toward the end of his career, you know, Updike was seen by some critics as being, they were talking about the narcissism of his writing. And, you know, I kind of connect narcissism with this, you know, grandiose self-importance and, you know, I don't know, need to be admired, and lack of empathy, you know, arrogance, et cetera, and which is clearly not the writer of these letters. I mean, Updike was somebody who was, you know, who was often fairly modest. I think he was also pretty much a good guy, too. He was diligent in answering his mail, often from readers, you know, that he had never met, and he was attentive to his mother and continually sharing news about his children. And he was a fairly modest guy, and I think he wanted to, I think he loved the attention in one sense, but I think the reason why he left New York City and his job at The New Yorker when he was very young was because he wanted space to get away from all that, where he could write and not necessarily be a celebrity and get his work done.
James Schiff is our guest. We're talking about the new book, Selected Letters of John Updike. The book is published by Knopf. John Updike was on our show in 2006 to talk about his novel Terrorist. And I remember that very, very well, obviously, because I was talking to John Updike. But the thing that I remember, as you were talking about modesty, and he was fascinated that this was a book that brought him back to the bestseller list, that this was a book that brought him back to be reviewed and not forgotten, and something that people were paying attention to. And he didn't say it as if he needed that, but just something that seemed to interest him.
Yeah, no, I think you've kind of grabbed on to something that was important, because even though he loved to write, he needed to write probably the way the rest of us need to eat and breathe, he wanted readers. And while he didn't necessarily always need to be basking in the glory, I think it did bother him, particularly in the, you know, maybe the last decade of his life, when he wasn't on on the bestseller list, or he wasn't on the cover of Time magazine in the way that he had been in decades past. And I think, you know, I think it's something that we all are attentive to in our lives, particularly as we get older, is that you want to be relevant. And if you've had a craft that you've done for decades, you want people to continue to appreciate and admire what you're doing. So I think it did. I think he was aware of that, as you know, often is true with writers. I mean, when I was a graduate student in the 1980s in New York, I remember, Saul Bellow and John Updike were the two best known, most famous living writers in English in the world. And, you know, and Bellow I have very few graduate students now who know much about Bellow. So I mean, this typically happens with writers over time, but I think it did matter quite a bit for John. And I think when he got a bad review from somebody, as you'll see in the letters, that really bothered him. And occasionally he would even write back to them, but it stuck with him. I think he might get 50 good reviews, if he got a couple really nasty ones, they hurt.
The other thing that you get from the book, and it's, see if you agree with this assessment, but it seems like it's buried between the lines in some cases, but you very much get an understanding about his writing, about what it was that propelled him and interested him in his work and in his fiction, and as a the difference, obviously, between a letter writer and his job as a writer.
You know, I think John was a little bit different than some other writers in that he didn't, I mean, writing was just part of his day, whether it was writing a letter or whether it was, you know, I mean, often even to his, to either of his wives or to his children, he would write notes about who called that day. And that actually then became a letter, you know, and he would leave those when he had to go out and so on. But I think writing was just something he was continually doing. So it wasn't necessarily, it's a little bit different from kind of this Hemingway-esque notion that we have of, you know, the work of writing, and you have to kind of pound it out in the morning, even though John did write in the morning, but that there was a sense of it was what he did as a human being, and he was constantly doing it. And when he was younger, he was drawing a lot too. I mean, he wanted to be a cartoonist probably more than he wanted to be a writer when he was a teenager, and and tried to do that for a while and sent a number of submissions to the New Yorker and elsewhere, and later, you know, drew some political cartoons for newspapers. But I think the idea of artistic creation was always something that he was doing. And so, as I said, he kind of kept this long paper trail, probably more of a paper trail than any writer that I've ever seen, and maybe more than we're going to see from writers, you know, after, you know, the current era, because, you know, letter writing is not something people do now. And even though we do other forms of communication, there are differences in those different forms.
When it comes to the letters that you were looking for, did you pretty much get everything you wanted, or were there the ones that got away?
No, I think so. I wanted to, you know, initially the project, when I talked to Martha Updike, you know, in 2015 and 2016, she was thinking of a collection that would be more of professional letters, letters to writers and to readers. And I said, I thought that was going to be problematic and too limited because, you know, John was a very candid and frank writer who wrote about everything. And he wrote about sexuality in often very stark and even graphic terms. And he did so unabashedly. And I felt like if we produced a letter of volumes and didn't have the personal letters and didn't have the more intimate letters, that readers wouldn't buy it, and they would say, well, where are the other letters? So I felt like it needed to be candid because that's what he did throughout his career. And fortunately, both of his wives did share their letters, and there were, you know, John and Mary, Mary being John's first wife, they married when he was at Harvard and she had just graduated from Radcliffe. So he was only 21. But like a lot of couples in the 50s, they married very early. And when they moved to Ipswich a few years later, Ipswich, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. they were in a kind of a swim of couples who had all married early and had children early and then had a number of affairs. And so both John and Mary did have affairs, you know, early on in their marriage. But I did a couple of the women who did have affairs with Updike did share their letters. So I do feel like and John's children have been very supportive of the project and very helpful and provided me with their letters, and writers have. So, you know, in some cases, some individual cases of different people, you know, it took a while to maybe get comfortable with the project and so on. But most people, I think, were kind of eager to share and maybe even show off their Updike letters. So it actually, you know, as I said, it took a long time. It took a number of years, but I was happy with what we ended up with.
After spending so much time and with so many letters and so much correspondence, what is it like to end that project? Does he eventually leave you, or will he always be there in perhaps a way that was different than how you started?
Right. No, it's a good question. Well, I'm currently working on a biography of John Updike, so he hasn't left me. And I suppose the letters volume was the assembly of that was really probably the first stage of the biography, mm-hmm. because It taught me an awful lot that I had not known before. And so I continue to be very interested in him. And, you know, on occasion, you know, when I see friends or strangers, you know, I've been working on Updike for 40 years, and, you know, they're kind of like, what are you working on? And then, you know, you're still working on Updike? What's the big deal? And I think, you know, for the reasons that I've already given, but I think what also happens over time is as you get to know a writer and their work so closely that you continue to be interested in that writer and their work, but you're also trying to understand another human being and the world in which they lived. And in certain ways, because he did have that long paper trail, that you can see things that you wouldn't necessarily be able to see, that I wouldn't even be able to see with people in my own family, because, again, I don't have that paper trail. I only have my imagination to speculate. So he continues to be interesting to me because he's so open to interpretation and there's so much information. So no, I'm still working on him and still enjoying it. I'm still learning things.
There's a letter. When is it? 1997. This book has gotten even my acolytes like Schiff and Pritchard wriggling a bit. That's you.
Right.
So we'll end with this question, which is your relationship with him. Of how do you look at that relationship?
Well, I did. I actually wrote to John Updike as a graduate student. I was living in Greenwich Village in New York in the late 1980s, and I sent him a letter, and I wanted him to answer some questions about his rewriting of The Scarlet Letter, Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter. And I didn't think I'd ever hear from him. And as it turns out, 5 days later, I find a letter in my mailbox with his blue-stamped address in Beverly Farms, Massachusetts, stamped in the upper left-hand corner. And he had responded to all of my questions and done so in absolutely ridiculously brief amount of time. And, you know, I was thinking, who answers their mail that quickly? Hmm. And as it turned out, I ended up writing him, you know, 15 or 20 letters, and he always responded. And then on a couple of occasions, we met, and he came to Cincinnati on two occasions that I brought him here. And, you know, he was always gracious and delightful and funny. And I think maybe the thing that hit me when I first met him, too, is I remember meeting him in a restaurant in Cincinnati. And when we first talked, I realized that he spoke exactly the way that he wrote these wonderful sentences streamed out of his mouth, and which made clear to me, I think, also why he could produce polished prose so quickly. I mean, he could write a New Yorker story in just, you know, 4 or 5 days, and it would be ready to go at times. But that was the way he thought. That was the way he spoke, and it was very impressive. And he was really a delight to be with. So no, I miss him, and you know, I feel fortunate to have gotten to know him a little bit.
The name of the book, Selected Letters of John Updike. It is edited by James Schiff and published by Knopf. James, thank you so much for being with us. What a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for this work.
Thank you, Joe. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
Be well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Selected Letters of John Updike. It is edited by James Schiff and published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.